911, what are you reporting?
I got a strange going on out here. Something just killed my dog.
Something killed your dog?
My dog went flying through the air over the tree. I don't know how it did it.
Okay.
Damn it, I'm really confused. All I saw was my dog coming over the fence, and he was dead when she hit the ground. I didn't see any cars. All I saw was my dog coming over the fence.
What are you reporting?
We got someone or something crawling around out here.
Did you see what it was?
It was. It was standing up. I'm out here looking through the window now and I don't see anything. I don't want to go outside. Jesus Christ, you better...
Sheriff?
Dia!
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6 foot nine, I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
Hey, everybody. This is Les Stroud. Yes, I know. A.K.A. Survival Man. And you're listening to Brian on Sasquatch Odyssey.
Hey guys, and welcome back to Sasquatch Odyssey. Thank you guys so much for clicking play. It is Sunday. This is your bonus show. I hope you guys are having a great weekend. We've got an amazing guest lined up for you, but as always, I want to start the show by inviting you. If you've had an encounter and you'd like to be on the show, shoot me an email. You can get me at brian@paranormalworldproductions.com. You can head over to the website, check it out, become a member there, and help support the show. As I said, this is your bonus show. We've got a great guest on today. It is Andy Webb from the UK, and he's an author and an experiencer, and he's written a book about his experiences that he and his wife had in their home in the UK. The book is called Armor of Light. Now, these experiences lasted over a period of about 15 years, and Andy decided, because of the negative stigma attached to writing such a book based on your own experiences, he decided to do a fictionalized version of the book based on the true story of the experiences that he and his wife went through in their home. I think you'll really enjoy the episode. If you haven't already done so, please rate and review the show wherever you're listening to the podcast and tell a friend about it as well. Tell them that you listen and tell them to give us a chance. Maybe they'll enjoy the show as much as you do. But I know you guys are ready to get into it, so I'm going to stop talking. You guys sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Folks, I want to welcome our guest to the show. It's Andy Webb coming to us from the UK. Good morning, Andy. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. Thank you.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. I've been excited to talk to you. So let's get right into it. I'm going to talk about your book, The Armor of Light. But before we get into that, let's start with your background and talk a little bit about your history and what got you involved in the subject of the paranormal.
That's right, yes. When I was 25 years old, back in 1991, I had enough money to buy my first home. It was like a small two-bedroom house it was, and it was a set of modern houses. But it was built on the site of an old doctor's surgery called The Grange. And it was here between 1967 to 1970. The doctor and his band of many friends, they used to meet in the evening and practice the occult, Ouija boards, spiritualism, and they used to contact the dead. And what they did was almost on the verge of Satanism, which they got involved with. It continued on to other pretty dreadful things as well, like holding satanic rituals with small animals and in the garage next door, and they buried the dead animals in the back garden. Anyway, suspicious neighbours, they contacted the police about what was going on most nights of the week, and the police raided the doctor's surgery about 1970. And many of the gang were arrested carrying out these satanic rituals. The gang were sent to prison for about several years by British law, which was like, murder against young animals. Anyway, the Grange, the doctor's surgery, the Grange was demolished. And the plot of land was sold to Brown company called Jonathan Dean Developments. And it's there that my house and several other houses were built about 1986. And my home and other people's homes as well inherited terrible paranormal activity due to what happened on this plot of land about some 15 years before. And my home literally blew up with pretty dreadful stuff about 1996. Many of my neighbours moved out of their homes because they were renting their homes, but I was the only person that actually had a mortgage on the house, so I had to continue paying the mortgage. And it all started in April the 18th, 1996, when a dirty, great, cloudy thing came through my wall about 2 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, that's during pitch black darkness, and I was totally devastated by what happened. And this great, cloudy thing was a demon. And this thing was experienced and seen by previous neighbours before, which they warned me about. Anyway, the electric lights cut out, came on again, cut out, came on again for about a full week after this thing came and went. And then this, after the appearance of this thing, also came several nights later, a black figure wearing a long black cloak standing by the bedroom door about 2 o'clock in the morning. And this thing is... an angelic being. It's a black angel from hell. And this thing stood by the bedroom door staring at me for quite some time until after some while I had the courage and guts to say, in the name of God, I command you to get out of my home. And after several moments, it turned around and then disappeared through the wall. Anyway, about a few nights later after that, I was woken up by a huge crash, bang, wallop on my bedroom wall, and an old man with chattering teeth came swishing across the bedroom, and the figure was flickering like one of those animated Walt Disney characters you get when you see the flickerball sort of cartoon animated pictures. And that disappeared after about 5 seconds. We continued to have paranormal sort of strange intermittent electrical failures in the house. And I was also, we had things move about as well, like tea bags and all sorts of coffee cutlery was put in the washing machine. What else happened? And we had an old woman as well that used to go past you at night time as well, which was like powerful electrical voltage. It continued like this for about 6 months until we eventually got a Baptist church minister called the Reverend David Holmwood to come and carry out an exorcism on my home. And he came through the door and he looked around my house and he said, "I'm going to see why these ghosts have come to you, Andrew. You filled up your home with pretty dreadful, bad stuff." For several years at college, I was a history student studying the Third Reich. And as you know, many members of the Third Reich, including Heinrich Himmler, that ran the SS, were heavily involved with the occult, black magic and Satanism almost. And I had many video cassettes, artifacts and books and magazines on the Third Reich. And all this sort of stuff which I was playing on my video recorder time was acting like a big invitation message, power magnet, to pretty dreadful spirits and ghosts and things. I'd woken up loads of dormant, sleeping sort of spirits and ghosts and things like that.
The Nazi faith in the destiny of the Aryan race is not the creation of Adolf Hitler, nor does it spring from the movement for racial hygiene. Its origins lie in the teachings of mystics, clairvoyants, and secret societies dedicated to the occult. In the violent aftermath of the First World War, an increasing fascination with the mystical and the esoteric had swept the German aristocratic and educated classes. So widespread is the influence of mystical doctrines that even one of Germany's most powerful generals believes that national salvation lies in reviving the worship of the Norse god Wotan. General Erich Ludendorff, hero of the Great War and former chief of the German General Staff, freely admits that he believes he is in psychic communion with the Nordic race soul. In 1923, Ludendorff had led an abortive coup in Bavaria. His ally was the little-known political agitator Adolf Hitler. Many of the members of Ludendorff's circle, including his future wife, are closely associated with an influential occultist group calling itself the Edda Society. The Edda Society is founded in December 1925 by Rudolf John Gorsleben. Some years earlier, Gorsleben had been active in extreme nationalist politics. He had been a speaker at meetings of the occultist Thule Society. and had founded a political movement with the anti-Semite Julius Streicher. Streicher would later become a key figure in the infant Nazi party. Gorsleben then abandons politics. He immerses himself in the task of deciphering the ancient Nordic script of the runes and penetrating the secrets of the Icelandic verses known as the Edda. In these, Gorsleben believes can be rediscovered the priceless magical heritage of the vanished Aryan godmen. In widely read periodicals, Gorsleben and the Edda occultists teach that traces of the blood of the Aryans are present in the German people. Warning against racial dilution, Gorsleben writes, "Remember, God dwells within you." It is a creed which will become the lifelong conviction of Heinrich Himmler, Reichsführer of the SS. As a youth, Himmler had avidly consumed the writings of the German occultists. He'd grown obsessed with astrology, spiritualism, and herbalism. Above all, he'd adopted as his own the mystical doctrine of the Aryan. If, as Himmler had come to believe, the blood of the Aryans runs most strongly in the veins of Germanic peoples, then, by breeding from the purest individuals, a race of superhumans could be produced, a race in which the Aryan psychic powers would grow ever stronger. Himmler, trained as an agriculturalist and devoted to the occult, is embarking on the strangest eugenics experiment in history.
They took this as like an invitation message to come to my home. And I felt like I was that Mickey Mouse, the magician's apprentice. I'd started something, but I didn't know how to stop it. Anyway, he carried out an exorcism, and he said, also, your home, you have put many pictures on your wall, you know, with ancient Egyptian hieroglyphic pictures, you know, like the ancient Egyptians did with all pharaohs' headdresses. And in these pictures were iconic icons, also with spiritualist invitation messages to them as well. A lot of these pictures had to come off the walls, and we carried out an exorcism in every room, and all my Nazi stuff and also my Egyptian pictures had to be put in a big plastic sack and taken up the dump because they were acting like a big invitation message to all these spirits. Cut long story short, it continued like this for about the next 10 years. It gradually fizzled out after a long, long time, but it never entirely went. And at the end of all this, of course, I was inspired to write a fictional storybook based on what happened to me. You know, it was a bit embarrassing as well because several years later I met a lady that was going to become my wife, and she was due to move in with me. And she moved in, and she was standing in the kitchen one day, one afternoon while I was at work, and she was cooking the evening meal. She felt something push her from behind. And also, she was sleeping on the bed one morning while I'd gone to work, and she felt something come into the room and literally sit on the bed. And she rang me up at work saying something was coming to the room and sat on the bed. You know, and it just continued like this until 2001 it was when I literally sold the house. You know, and it was just a persistent paranormal activity which refused to go. Anyway, after all this, I was inspired to write a storybook, a fictional storybook based on a family that had moved into their new house and experienced the same sort of paranormal activity that I had. But of course, I didn't want to write it about myself and give away all my address and everything where I lived, because it would cause bad arguments and legal suing from neighbours that lived around me. They'd take me to court saying, because of what you've written and published, Andrew, you've caused all sorts of reputational damage to my property. So I had to write a fictional story. Yeah, that's what happened, Brian. But a lot of this was very rare and unique. I wrote a story to a very popular national magazine. Perhaps you can see that. I'm on the front page. A lot of people do say that my work has a lot of potential to it. So I saw your website on the internet as it clicks out on Facebook. So I thought I'd reply to that. Yeah. But that's basically what happened without spending too much time.
Well, I'm glad you reached out. And I want to talk a little bit about your history before you moved into this particular house. Did you have any type of activity before the house? Did you even believe in the paranormal? Or was it something that literally started when you moved into this home?
Stay tuned for more Sasquatch Odyssey. We'll be right back after these messages.
Yes, I did believe in the paranormal. My parents were church-going people, and I went to two different churches before I actually moved into this property in Cambly, Surrey. And I was always warned, there is never contact the dead. There are such a thing as ghosts. There's a place called heaven. There's a place called hell. And there is a Satan. And also, my father told me at the time, back in the 1960s, he held a Ouija board session with his friend, a next-door neighbour friend called Brian Neller. And they accidentally contacted my dad's grandfather. And he had he said, Don, which was my father, he said, I've got a message for you. It's okay to move back to London. And also, your mother will be dead by Christmas. And it goes, my father, oh, my God, you know. Anyway, this actually did happen in the winter of 1966 in southern London. My grandfather actually did have a car crash, and he crashed the car. And the following morning, my father's mother died of a heart attack in the winter of 1966. And everything was told through the Ouija board did come true. Yeah, and I've never forgotten that as well. And also, we Brits, we're great believers of ghosts and the supernatural. Apparently, the London Underground, which has been more and more publicised, the London Underground train network is absolutely full of ghosts. During the building of this over 100 years, they disturbed so many mass graves from the plague. Many people have been killed in train crashes down there on the Northern Line, the Piccadilly Line, the Southern Line, and so on and so forth. It's a well-known fact that the London Underground train network is full of ghosts. And so many people go to work on the London Underground, and they're there a few weeks, and they say, I'm not coming back there. I've seen something that is downright scary. I've seen something on the TV monitors. You know, we've seen a young woman wearing a brown skirt and a brown jacket with long blonde hair. I said to her, madam, you can't get out. We have to let you out because the station's all locked up. And the woman has just disappeared into thin air. Now, so many people of all nationalities are comfortable saying that London Underground train network is absolutely full of spooks. And we have trouble trying to keep our staff, you know, due to all this paranormal activity. Yeah.
So when you actually reached out for help and you had these priests come in, and at least on two occasions, you said they did an exorcism of the home.
That's right, yes.
Do you believe, or did they shed any light on the majority of the stuff? You mentioned the pictures and the Third Reich stuff that you were studying in school that played a part in this, obviously. But was it their opinion that what this doctor and this group of people that were practicing the satanic worship or these kind of things before that, is that what drummed all this stuff up, or is that what you believe?
It certainly was, yes. This property inherited loads of spirits that had been contacted to the doctor's surgery that stood there before. And the guy that came to carry out the exorcism twice was a guy called the Reverend David Holmwood. He was a very competent church minister. He's also been on British TV as well. He's been on Carol Vorderman's Mysteries programme, in which he came on the programme and gave testimony and witness about all previous exorcisms he's had to carry up before. And so many homes that are full of ghosts are filled up with pretty dreadful stuff to do with voodoo, you know, the Nazi SS, and the ancient Egyptian pharaohs that were involved with spiritualism as well. So he came to carry out the exorcism twice. And as he went in every room, we prayed in every room that all the spirits would leave. And we opened up all the windows so the spirits could get out, because we prayed in the love, blood, and power of Jesus Christ that these spirits will be ejected. And these spirits will be ejected with such force they will actually smash windows to get out. So we had to open up all the windows. And things did gradually change after that. But it took a very, very long time, though. But it never entirely went with this paranormal activity.
And you mentioned that it got physical once your wife moved into the house. Is she the only one that experienced sort of the physical attacks, or did you experience that as well?
I did experience it on and off for quite some time. We had, let me see now, we had the ghost of an animal, a young dog it was, a puppy dog, like an Alsatian dog. I woke up to go to bed, so I'd go to the toilet one night. And there was like a ghost of a dog standing by the bed. And this dog sort of, it was like a transparent, semi-opaque black image. And that just turned around after several moments, then disappeared through the wall. There was a young woman that kept sitting on the bed with her hair back, tied back in a big bun. And she had a long, slightly long Victorian skirt on, about 1900. And she was a small woman. And I stared at this woman. And after some while, she turned her head and stared back at me. And it was a semi-opaque black image. And after about 15 minutes, this woman gradually disappeared. She felt something sit on the bed. There was other things as well. She said that also electrical appliances were turned on as well, like the extractor fan, the Kenwood Chef blender. Electric lights were turned on by themselves as well. Yes, that's a typical another sign of paranormal activity. They're like turning electrical appliances on and playing with things as well. They're like making their presence known.
And you said it never stopped. So obviously, how long after the exorcism did you see a change in things immediately, or did it take time after the exorcisms were performed?
It took about 3 years till it gradually settled down a bit, but it didn't entirely go. But what it is, I had to cut down on playing video cassettes to do with bad, negative, demonic things. I had to get sort of like, we had to put on the walls photographs and pictures of a religious nature, like praying hands. We had another one of the Lord Jesus Christ. And my wife comes from the Ukraine, and she brought some religious pictures as well, with like Mary and Joseph and Mary and Jesus and things like that. We put those on the walls and we hang those. And that acted like a good positive influence, which sort of cleansed the environment of the whole house.
I'm always curious how you handle a situation like that when you're in a home as a homeowner, obviously, and you sell the place to leave. How do you handle that conversation with the people that are buying it? Do you have a conversation with them about the activity, or do you just pass it on and hope for the best for them?
I didn't mention it at all to anyone, although by British law, we were told that if there's any problems with the property whatsoever, you are legally bound and legally obliged to write it and state it down on paper if there's any problems at all. And to sell this property, I had to really pray to God that, you know, that they would not find out about the history of this land, about the history of this property. I kept quiet about it. I did not mention a word about any paranormal activity or the bad story that this property was built on. So I kept, don't tell a soul. I had to. It took us 2 years to sell this property because it was in the back in the recession of 2011. You know, it took us 2 years to sell the property to, you know, actually move on. I had to keep very, very quiet. I had to deny all knowledge about what happened with this property years ago. My wife as well, she was not happy living in this house that we lived in. She suffered bad nightmares, and so did I. I kept seeing figures of 666. Very regularly in dreams at night. I used to suffer bad dreams, bad nightmares, and it was almost impossible, mentally impossible, trying to sleep in this house. My wife felt very ill and very depressed living in this place. She said to me, Andrew, if you don't sell this property so we can buy a decent house somewhere else, I'll divorce you and I'll leave you. And that's the ultimate. She was going to file for divorce if I didn't sell this house. And that's the sort of situation that I was in. So I kept damn quiet to any future buyers about what was going on in this house and what had happened before. So that's the situation I was in. You just got to deny all knowledge of it. I know nothing about that, you know. Since I sold the property in 2011, that property has been up for sale 4 times in 10 years. I wonder why. They're probably thinking, oh, my God, there's something not nice about this place. I feel ill living there and I sleep badly every night. And I get these appearances of things that are just won't leave me alone. So I thought, you know, don't tell them. Mum's the word, eh?
Yeah, it's like a catch-22, right? If you do tell people, they probably think you're crazy.
Yeah. I mentioned all these stories to my colleagues at work, and they said, that bloke Andrew Webb's a strange one. This does get you a strange, bad reputation at the office. And, you know, some people keep thinking, you're mentally ill, mate. You know, you're not right in the flipping mind. You talk about this sort of thing that you've seen this and you've seen that. You've probably got some mental illness, possible schizophrenia or something. So what it is a situation, you've got to live with this and keep quiet about it. Otherwise, you'll get yourself a very strange reputation. Yeah.
So you decided to write the book, and I certainly understand the reason why you approached it the way that you did, creating this fictional storyline with this family. So yes. What was the project like? What was the process like for you to write the book and sort of relive some of those experiences that you had? Was it tough for you, or was it a cathartic thing? Do you think it helps you overall to write the book?
Stay tuned for more Sasquatch Odyssey. We'll be right back after these messages.
It certainly did. Yes, reliving, writing down all what had happened. I had so much material to write a book. It was rare and unique, and it was never written about before. And I used to love writing stories. So I've always loved written stories. Written work at school was really my great asset. I was also inspired by J.K. Rowling as well. She, at the time, this was back in the mid-1990s, it was, she had great success with Harry Potter and all this sort of thing. She had had quite a past with her life as well. I had a lot of memories about my life, what happened to me, which inspired me to write a book. I literally wrote and wrote and wrote nonstop for several weeks with all this material that I had. I didn't have to think of anything for a minute at all. Anyway, but it took me about a year to finish the book, and I sent it off to four publishing companies, and it was accepted four times by publishing companies up in London. The Americans showed a great deal of interest in it. They were, because they thought, you know, this sort of story should be made into like a television program. You know, it's very racy. It's got a very fast-moving, very racy, fast-moving storyline. I mean, it's not full of, some people put full their stories up with loads of waffle, but mine is all contents and no package, if you know what I mean. It's all full of so much meat. It's all meat and no potatoes, if you know what I mean. And the Americans did say that it has massive potential. They said it's possibly so. It could be made an American TV program as well, because so many films are very popular in Hollywood and they make so much grossing revenue, you know, film production companies. And I did send it off to some production companies, and they said, yeah, it's a very, very good story, but it'll be expensive to make. You know, and they said, oh, crikey, it's a bit outside our budget, Andrew. It's a great story, fantastic, but it's a bit outside our budget. Sorry, it's a no. And because over the money side, they gave it the thumbs down. But I'm still continuing. People do say, I've spoken to other people who are saying, your story is an extremely good, well-written story. It's got a lot of appeal to it, and it has massive potential. But they said, Andrew, still continue to advertise your story. And I'm sure it will get picked up one day, one month, whenever. It will be taken forward.
Well, lots of people listen to this show. So somebody out there may be listening right now that may be interested in that. So after you completed the book project and your wife moved on to a new house, have you had other activity since then, or did it completely stop once you guys left the property?
It's funny you should say that. When we moved to our new house now, which is North Camberley, in Surrey, UK, some of the ghosts actually came with us. And we have had some funny goings on. We bought them three dogs. Perhaps you can hear them now. We got through three little chihuahua dogs. They've actually managed to pick up on things moving during the night. We had the old woman that sat on the side of the bed. She has actually came with us as well. And she has actually made some appearances in our bedroom during the night as well. That was the old woman that wore her hair back in the bun. We've had the previous owner as well, a woman called Sue Meffam. She actually died in this house as well. That's why the house was up for a quick sale. Her little brother wanted to sell the house very quickly. Sue Meffam actually died in this house. Our dogs have actually picked up on figures that have been standing on the stairs. I've also slept sometimes in the living room at the back of the house, and they've actually seen some figures move from the door across the lounge and gone out through the garden as well. You know, so we've actually had some spiritual activity, which has been mainly picked up by our three little dogs. And as you know, animals are very susceptible to picking up spiritual presences as well. And also, some funny guy at my office, I told him about this as well. For one Christmas present, he gave me a Ouija board, you know, for one Christmas present. Oh, thank you very much indeed, you know, Richard, thank you much. You know, I think they're trying to be funny. So I took it home in my case. And one evening I took it out while me and the wife were in the just alone in the house. And the actual glass did start scooting across the table to different letters. I said, can you please spell your name, please? S-U-E. That's the previous owner, Sue Meffam. We've also had the glass shoot off to and the letters MO, M-O, which could be the lady that came with us. Anyway, after many appearances, I did actually tell this ghost of the old lady that kept sitting on the side of our bed, look to the light and go. This is not your home. This is our home. You should please find your way across to the other side. Please look to the light and go. And this woman disappeared, and we never saw her again after that. So that's how the spiritual sort of occurrences we've had in the house we've had now. So I'm very much a person, yes, there certainly is ghosts and spirits in the afterlife, especially as I've been to church many years of my life. I've been told by many intelligent church ministers, both in the Church of England and the English Baptist Church, there is a God, there is a Satan. You must never contact the dead. You know, it's from these people that are perfectly intelligent people that there is an afterlife, there is a spirit world. But, you know, like it is in the United States, I do believe about half the country goes to church in America, and much the same has been said in the United States as well. Yeah, so that's where we are so far. Got my book published. I've got a great advert in the my magazine as well. I did send it off to American TV publication TV companies as well. They said, great idea, but it's going to be expensive to make. We've never heard of you before, Andrew Webb. How do we know this is going to work out? You know, there's loads of people around the world saying, who the hell's Andrew Webb? Don't want to know. So it's a matter of getting your name out there persistently and well known. Then they'll start accepting you and your work. So it's that I've been working on.
Well, I'm glad you reached out, and I'm glad we could do our small part on this show. It's one of those things I totally get. You know, if J.K. Rowling's name was attached to the book, nobody would be telling her it's too expensive to make, right? If you're not J.K. Rowling, then you have those issues. Yeah. Where can people find the book? Where can they pick it up? Where's the best way to find it and get it from
you? They can find it on Amazon. Got it. That's right, yeah. Also got my own website as well. andy-web.com, I think it is, but quite a well-written website. It's been on there for about 2 years now, but you can buy it on Amazon.
I will link to all that in the show notes for you guys to pick up the book and check out the website. Andy Webb, thanks so much for coming on and sharing your story, man. I had a blast talking to you.
Thank you. Thanks so much indeed.
They say you don't gotta go home, but you can't stay here.